Seeds are dried up beneath their sod. Cellars are left bare. Barns are in ruins because the wheat has dried up. Joel chapter 1, verse 17. From the version of Yours Truly from 2003. And that is our daily scripture for today, little children. And we're resuming, once again, the study that we have been conducting of the article, The Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, chapter 9 now, paragraph 12, the final chapter of, or final paragraph, or not the final chapter, but the final paragraph of this chapter. Jacob's fight with the angel is a sculpture depicted here. It's a carving from about 1700 to 1710 of the Common Era. Look at this beautiful thing carved from boxwood. What a magnificent looking sculpture that is, or wood carving. Obviously the angel is the one with the wings, although in actuality angels looked a lot like humans in the Bible. They didn't really look different. So the wings are some kind of artistic license based on other angelic creatures like cherubim. But the English Standard Version of the Bible now, reading our chapter, our paragraph, gives the name of Abraham. That's the English Standard Version of the Bible. The name of Abraham occurs in that version 231 times. A number being also 3 times 77. Well, 3 times 70 is 210, right? Plus 3 times 7, which is 21. 210 plus 21 is 231. The many significant events in Abraham's life are recorded in the Bible. But this number 77 comes into that number 231, which as a factor. So of course 77 has the two factors 7 and 11, because it's equal 7 times 11, equal to 7 times 11. So the divine factor 7 is in the number 231, but also the divine factor 77 is there. The many significant events in Abraham's life are recorded in the Bible, including his trip to Egypt during a famine. Abraham was a wealthy man who had married his half-sister, moved from Ur to Haran with his father Terah, and he later located to Canaan with his wife Sarah. Canaan, that is, he located to with his wife Sarah and his nephew Lot. The thing is, in some, I think it's in the book of Jasher, where it says that Sarah is the sister of Lot and the daughter of Lot's father. Whereas Abraham in the Bible says that Sarah is the daughter of, well, his half-sister, he calls Sarah. Let's see if we can find that by looking for it here. Half-sister? No, she's my... No, he doesn't call her half-sister. He says, sister, daughter, father. She'll be able to find it. She is truly my sister, he says. The daughter of my father, only not the daughter of my mother. Genesis 20 and 12. So that's at odds with what the book of Jasher says. But we don't have to know that this is... But he says truly. She is truly my sister. So it's hard to believe that he's not telling the truth when he says truly. Right? Whereas, you know, sometimes Bible figures might not be perfect. They might tell a lie, a fib. in some cases, to someone who's their enemy, maybe, even though they're faithful people. We don't really know for sure that it's true, but he says truly, so that seems to leave it without any doubt. But anyway, he married his half-sister, as we say there. He moved from Ur to Haran with his father, Terah, and he later located to Canaan with his wife, Sarah, and his nephew, Lot, because they had also moved from Ur to Haran, evidently. He lived to be 175 years old, Abraham did, and his son Isaac to be 180 years old. Terah never moved to Canaan, so Acts 7 and 4, saying that Haran was Abraham, induced, saying that from Haran was Abraham induced by Jehovah to move his residence after his father's death. May refer to the mere formality. Genesis 11:26 gives us that Terah was 70 at Abram's birth. Terah lived to be 205 years old from Genesis 11:32. Which has induced some to abandon the former scripture in favor of the next verse, Genesis 12 and 1, when Abraham is described as leaving Haran, in order to glean chronology from it, as Genesis 12:4 says that Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran, some then computing Terah as 130 at Abram's birth, in other words, 205 minus 75. Had Terah been 130 years old, Moses may also have said so. However, there is no need for us to begin with computation of such a kind, because Terah was said to die at 205 years. Just because they said he died at 205 years doesn't mean that that was the same time when Abraham moved to Canaan. In faith, when Terah was 70 at Abram's birth, then Abraham was about 135 years old at the death of Terah, after which time, right, 70 plus 135 is 205, after which time, that is when Abraham was 135, his official residence was changed to that of Canaan because Terah died. The book of Jasher witnesses positively to the very things we say, saying that Terah dies as Isaac reaches 35. I mentioned that recently, not that you have to go back and listen to it, but it was in one of the studies recently, putting Abraham as Genesis 21 and 5 at 100 at Isaac's birth. Because we know that anyway, so, and Terah died, it said, when Isaac reached 35, right? And since Isaac was born when Abraham was 100, then Terah died when Abraham was 135, 35 plus 100. And that means, since Terah lived to be 205, and Abraham was 135, 205 minus 135 is 70. 70 is the age of Terah when Abram was born to him. It also mentions, we don't need to go into any more of what is mentioned in the book of Jasher, actually, but you can read that if you want, but pray we yield quickly when a better chronology is proven. May we be encouraged to put up a hard fight for the faith, even though we yield quickly when we've proven something and found something better. We still fight hard when that's not the case. Abraham is the father of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So Abraham is the father of three different religions. quite an important person. Abraham is a king named Ninus Keterleomer or Gudea, or Gudea, Gudea. That's Ninus Keterleomer or Gudea fought Abraham. We call him by all of those three names. And Abraham, with a small force of men, came off the victor. Gudea, who gained power by marriage, taking the place of a firstborn son, has a name corresponding very well with the name Ninus, as both have the meaning of the firstborn son. Yeah, Gudea also means firstborn son, the Kuduru. Incredible. So Ninus means firstborn son, and so does Gudea. So, I mean, if they're not the same person, I mean, based on all the facts that we have, with they're living at the same time period, being very similar in the fact that they're both living at the beginning of the Assyrian Empire. It's just hard to not identify them. Gudea may correspond in some way to Nimrod, as both gained their power by a way other than direct descendancy. And it is Nimrod's first crown that Gudea's statues also express. Right, so it's kind of an echo of Nimrod. The first Nimrod, that is, who is somebody who got his power as some kind of great hunter who was in opposition to Jehovah. So he didn't get it, his power, that is, legitimately. And Gudea got it by marriage, but also by rebelling against his lord, right, and conquering the king who at that time is also called Nimrod in the book of Jasher. But Nimrod and Ninus also are often confused in the ancient Orient. Not just the confusion of the different Nimrods who lived at different times, 500 years apart, but also the confusion between, there is a confusion between the two names Nimrod and Ninus, or the two people, rather, not the names so much, maybe. Although the names are quite similar, too. Nimrod and Ninus, they both start with N-I, and M and N are not that different, so it's quite similar, but there's a lot of confusion about Nimrod and about Ninus and Nimrod. So that's in the ancient Orient, or the Middle East particularly. As we have found language study to be useful in confirming Abram's birth, 2206 BCE, do we start to study ancient writing? That's the end of this chapter 9. So we found that our language study led us to identify Ninus with Gudea, or with Keterleomer also. So they're all the same person. Kuduru, Kedor, Gudea, Ninus, they're all the same person. So evidently from our brief, it didn't even take a lot of study to prove that, right? Not really. But we did use language study to help confirm it. And when we did that, I mean, it just corresponded perfectly in the time, the chronology. So that, because of the correspondence in the chronology, that's what proved Abram's birth, because everything worked according to the book of Jasher, that the exact right time period, the date even for... it's astounding. For the beginning of the Assyrian kingdom, we were able to demonstrate that 2141 is exactly the right time, which was a date we'd already derived. I'm trying to think when we first came up with 2141, though. Maybe we didn't already derive it. No, I'm sure we did. I'm sure, because that's why I was so amazed when I first noticed that. And the year 5 of Gudea, or year 6 rather, when he conquered Anshan, which is 5 years after year 1, being another great correspondence between the 5-year difference between 2146, which was the exact year according to the birth of Abraham and the book of Jasher, when Keterleomer came with his multiple kings to do a conquest in Canaan and all around that area. But the other year being 2141, 5 years later, so there's a perfect correspondence in time, and the book of Jasher said, yes, Abraham was at that time when that king that they called Chedorlaomer, who we think with great, great reason for thinking it, was Gudea, defeated his own master, Nimrod, which is in year 10 of Abram being, or at that time he was called Abram, being in Canaan. And year 10 when he was in Canaan was, since he was there, starting in, at the age of 55, his year 10 was when he was 65, and 65 years after 2206, well, 2206, which we had already predetermined as the birth date of Abram. Abram, we didn't have to do any more work. 2141, we got that. Not only is that our date that we derived independently for the beginning of the kingdom of Assyria, I'm trying to remember how we derived it now. Oh, we'll have to. I know we'll be covering all this, but I want to know. It's fascinating to me. Let's see if we can find it quickly, because we've got lots of time. But it only seems that way. Let's see. Wild Road Ahead to History. Oh, we did it earlier, previously, in this same article. We discovered it previously in the same article. That's what it was. So all of this discovery was happening. That's quite remarkable, isn't it? Because this article was too early. I don't think that, even though I wrote Moses before this article, I don't think I mentioned the time period of Assyria at that point. But it was discovered in the Ark of Urartu itself, talking about the sack of Babylon, which had been 1531, and we raised it because of the solar eclipses to 1544. Look at that, it's even in the same chapter 9. Earlier we related to the, okay, so it's earlier in this. Let's look at part 1. Let's see here if we can do that. There it is. So, yeah, I said here we would rather not. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I give a reference to where we first did that. Well, it's in one of my notebooks on page 141. Interestingly, 2141 is the date, and it's on page 141 of notebook 26 of yours truly. So that's rather unusual coincidence there too. It's called living right. It's called living right when things line up. Let's see what else we got. Yeah, it is vain to seek either for the founder or the time of its foundation. Talking about Assyria, it's vain. There's no hope. You'll never find it. Quoting Mr. Henry Bostwick. And so I love that. I love that because you want to quote that after you discover it, not beforehand, because it's too discouraging if you focus on it beforehand. And that just makes everything so much better. Let's see if we can do this in a darker font here. I can't, can I? Why is that so bright? Isn't that dark? When I do a Google search, shouldn't it be dark? Why is it so bright? Let's go to the next thing. I think that's the first time I mentioned it. But at that point, I had not discovered. Okay, so what do we say here in this chapter or in this paragraph of part one? Or it's part two. No, here it is, part one. This is part one, yeah. It was also mentioned previously in part two of the Arc of Urartu, but part one, I had already discovered it about Gaudiya. But when did I discover the 2141 and the sack? Oh, I know what to search for. Sack of Babylon. Yeah, that's what we need to search for. I think. I don't see why I would have mentioned it in any previous article, though. Sack of Babylon. Okay, evidently that was the earliest time. So, it's okay. It's fine. But I know I had not discovered the alignment at all at the time when I first came up with 2141. It was because of this Sack of Babylon date. So, I mean, how blessed is that? It's called living right when things go your way. And it wasn't something that just was easy. Like, none of the genealogy was easy. I'm working night and day, like slaving to discover all the relations between the dates. I'm still working on it now. So let's consider some of the things I've been doing recently before we run out of time here. I just considered something here. Yeah. I thought there's another way to get this answer. Like, let's say we didn't use... Remember I said Mr. Jackson had a number 12.175 for the number of months in a year. And our number is, you know, that we calculated was 12.3682674. We're just more accurate because it doesn't terminate. You know, the decimal doesn't end, but we're not really more accurate. Mr. Jackson just did his calculation by saying 365.25. I meant to say delete here, 0.25, divided by 30 days in a month, and that's how he got 12.175. Okay, so, you know, evidently, anyway, that's how he got it. So we can get 12.175, and let's use that when we take the 3984 years of the old chronicle. Let's divide by 12.175. 327 years. But let's add to that 217, which we're assuming are years and not months. Add 217. And we get 544. What good is that number? I'm trying to think. In any other sense, I'm not sure what else it means. But add that to our... we can add that to 2738. Okay. And we get 3282, which is the deluge. Or if we added it to 2737, which is year one of Shenong, we get 3281.2, which is the year 3282. We're right at the time of the deluge in our chronology, 3282. So that's something I discovered recently, right? And then the other thing that's interesting is the Theban kings are said to be, well, there's two dates given. It's either 1076 or 1124, which differ by 1124 minus 1076, which is 48 years. It's another similar discrepancy to the number that was given for the certain number of kings of this. I think the first 15 kings. First 15 kings of the Sothic cycle, 443. According to, what was it? What source? The Old Chronicle or the Book of Sothis? Whatever it was. Let's see. Where are we? Here we are. Let's see. Oh, I restarted my browser. That's what happened. Again, I had a problem with my audio. There we go. Look at this. Okay, it's not too bad. Not too far away from what we're looking for. It's useful to look at all these old documents and see what we can find. There it is. 38 dynasties of ruling for 1,124 years after the dispersion, according to the Kings of Thebes, right? Document, which purports to be from Eratosthenes from Syncellus, but somebody put a footnote. Mr. Waddell here says in his footnote, this is from Mr. Waddell's book, you know, Manetho, again, with an English translation, 1940. He says, what does he say about that? Let's see. I'm going to go down here. There was a footnote somewhere about that anyway, that it's not, somebody didn't believe it. Maybe that's not true of this particular book. Maybe that was some other book, so I won't be able to say it unless I find it here. Quickly, though, Book of Sothis, or the Old Chronicle. Yeah, the Old Chronicle, right. So this is where we got the 3,984 years and the 217 years. There it is, the 443 years. There it is, and it says, the Book of Sothis says 395, right? So that's what I was looking for. So 443 minus 395 gives a similar discrepancy of 48 years, and we don't know why. We don't know why there's this discrepancy of 48 years in two of these documents. Like, what's the 48 mean? It means nothing in our chronology that I know of or that I can think of. So I'm in constant investigation of all these things, because a breakthrough can be made. But we found in the Wild Road article, to which I would like to return momentarily here. Where was that? Right around this time. Was it over here? Can't tell. Is this it? Yeah, that's Wild Road. Yeah, okay, so search for 2765. What do we get? It finds it. Right. So if Osiris died in 2737, right, instead of the date we gave, which is 2747, I guess, before when we talked about it, because it was his 27th year, or his 28th year, 27 years, therefore, prior to 2737, 28 years prior to that would be 2765. 37 plus 28 is 65, right? 20 and 30 is 50, and 7 and 8 is 15. 15 and 50 is 65, so 2765. So that number, when we take that number, 2765, trying to keep an eye on the time here, subtract 1124, and what do you get? You get 1641, which is exactly, or, you know, close to what we think is the beginning of the Hyksos dynasty. So the end of this, it's the end of the Theban kings, if you want to look at it that way. But I mean, there's so many ways we could look at it, but that's the way I wanted to see if I could explain this. But we want to unify it, so it's a simpler, you know, set of equations or whatever, a simpler account where we don't have to keep changing the date when things are revolving. Like 2711 was a very good date too, right? So let's consider 2711 minus, and now we'll use the other number, 1076, which was the other discrepancy number. 48 years different for the Theban kings. 2711 minus 1076. 1635 is not that much different from 1641. So even that works. The 2711 date can work for us as well. So, but you know, approximately. We're trying to get things that are exact, but it's very difficult to get them exact, is what the problem is. But the reason why 1641 is so crucially good, if we can get something near that, is because 1641 subtract the 108 years of that dynasty, according to the Turin canon, is 1533, which is the expulsion of the Hyksos by the pharaoh Amos the First in that year, which is the date. Well, it's somewhere around that year. Yeah, so even that's not 100% certain that year either. But we think the 1641 was a good estimate for the beginning of the Hyksos dynasty. That's why we're trying to make it line up. Or 1640. 1640 is about right. That's for the Hyksos dynasty 15. They ruled in the north of Egypt. And that's in the Wild Road article. And that, what we just read, is from chapter 9, paragraph 4 of Wild Road. Wild Road Ahead to History, one of the articles we studied earlier. I'm not trying to keep a full account of all my videos online because it takes up a lot of space online. Maybe I shouldn't worry about that, but I've been deleting a lot of my videos just to keep it more manageable, not having so many different things online. I'm not sure how far back the videos go now in the studies that we've been doing. I'll check that and find out, because that's not that easy to find out, I don't think. Yeah, okay. I'm not able to look at it until I log in. But that's it for today's study. I hope you enjoyed it. It's always good if we can keep things exciting, though. That's the thing. So that's why, you know, studying things that are exciting and interesting to us is a very important thing to do. That's why I study the things that I study, because it's interesting to me. And it's really important, I believe, for all of us to do the same, for ourselves, to study what's interesting to us, particularly. And of course, the Bible helps keep us on track, really. It's not a book to limit us. It's a book to help us keep on the right track so that we can do these original things. And the date is December 19th, 2024, of the Common Era. The time is 1446. Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green, and thank you so much for listening and watching once again. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. That was the end of Chapter 9 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, an article we've been studying continually for some time, the Ark of Urartu, and we'll be starting Chapter 10, hopefully, tomorrow. My health is coming along. It's, you know, the virus I had, that, or the infection, was cured